You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
The only good thing is, in high net worth, hopefully there's still enough money in the rest of the estate to provide some sort of equalization. I sound like doom and gloom, but there's the reality of the law has a limited amount of ways to protect you. So if you're the have-not and you're thinking about, well, when I file, she's going to really come down and start squeezing me out of everything. Before you announce, in fact, even before you hire the lawyer, do your own due diligence. Where are the tax returns? Can you get a copy? If there's business records, get some list to help inform yourself and your counsel and your team. What are we looking for? So knowing ahead of time what you're going to be fighting over is important.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Welcome to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're exploring the intersection of high conflict and high net worth divorce with attorney Susan Myers from Houston, Texas. In this episode, we delve into the intricate dynamics of divorce proceedings at the crossroads of high conflict and high net worth. Marriages unraveling in such scenarios face a myriad of challenges, from navigating complex financial landscapes to heightened emotional intensity that often accompanies disputes over substantial assets. And as the stakes escalate with greater financial resources at play, so does the potential for drawn-out courtroom battles, where each party may wield significant financial ammunition leveraged for their position. And amidst these battles is the welfare of the children, which can be profoundly impacted as extended litigation periods can pose heightened risks and uncertainties, inviting additional chaos and contention. In this episode, we underscore the need, the urgent need, for effective resolution strategies that prioritize the well-being of all involved. So before we dive in, a little about today's guest. Susan Myers is a matrimonial attorney and certified family law specialist. Susan's been practicing family law in Houston since 1982, forming her own firm, Myers & Associates, in 2011. She's been named to the annual list of Texas super lawyers since 2006, and is a past president of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. Now, there's a lot of matrimonial attorneys out there. I've met a lot of them, and I was particularly drawn to Susan for this podcast episode because of her experience, but also because of her heart. So over the course of her career, Susan's developed a keen interest in mental health, psychology, and the dynamics of interpersonal relationships. And she approaches her clients as if she were an aunt or a big sister. She's often said, "This is not my money. These are not my children. This is not my life. I will give you my advice as I would a trusted sister or aunt, but the final decisions have to be yours." And with that spirit, let's dive in and benefit from her pearls of wisdom. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much, Karen. It's a pleasure being with you and your audience.
Susan, you have a lot of experience in this area of high conflict and high net worth, and I want to dive into some very specifics. But before we get into that, why matrimonial law?
Well, actually, Karen, that was an accident. When I first started practicing law back in 1982, one of my bosses started getting some appointments in the family law courts, and I found my client. It is exactly what I needed to do. It allows not just the financial, the interpersonal, but a lot of trial time, which is what I really enjoyed when I first started practicing. So it was an accident. It was one of those serendipitous things where my career, even now, I still love what I do. And that would be one of my pieces of advice. Do not work with somebody who does not generally have an attraction and a fire about practicing what they do. Because if they don't, they probably are not going to be staying at the top of their game and the kinds of things that your audience wants to know.
Yeah, I love that piece of advice. I don't believe anybody's said that before, and that makes so much sense. And does your firm do primarily litigation? Is there collaboration, mediation? Just a little bit about that.
We are an all-purpose shop in the sense that all we do is family law. We don't do very much adoption work, which is under the umbrella of family law. We do not do a lot of children's protective services, which is almost a quasi-criminal. We don't do that. Everything else we do, from marital agreements, both before and after marriage, we do divorces, we do modifications, and everything in between. But we have all the tools in our toolboxes. And by tools, I mean, we are all competent to go to trial. We are all competent to do discovery disputes, which is eating our lunch. We're also competent to do collaborative law, which I believe should be a requirement that all lawyers talk to clients about the option of doing collaborative law. None of us are mediators, but we do go to mediation, at least in Harris County, where I practice, and in Fort Bend, which is the other place that we practice. It's a requirement. You're going to do mediation before temporary orders, and you're going to do mediation before final orders. So learning how to negotiate to make sure that you cover the waterfront is essential. But I am certified arbitrator, so I could do that work. But our goal is a case can come in, and depending on the needs of the case, our toolbox will have the tool to resolve it. And note, during the course of a case, it may start out collaborative and then turn into an impasse, and we have to send it out. But it might start out as high conflict, and then we find a way to get to, and it looks like we're going to court, looks like there's going to be litigation, and then something changes, the dynamic changes, and we can get into mediation and get the case resolved.
Beautiful. I love that.
So whatever works.
Yep. Perfect. So let's dive into, you know, you're dealing with a truly high conflict case when, can you finish that sentence?
Oh, I wish I could.
Yeah.
Because I have yet to predict when a case comes in, whether it's going to be high conflict at the end of the case. After 42 years, it can show up as high conflict with all kinds of filings and this is our fourth modification or whatever it is that's going on in the family. That's an indication, just the history of the case, but it's not the single case. It's the history of it that shows it. I might be able to predict the initial high conflict because of what brought the client to the office, a big scene, a big breach of trust, something like that might trigger what looks like a high conflict, but I've had an equal number of cases that show up that I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be, let's put the inventory together, let's do our valuations, fill in the squares, get to mediation, see how it all shakes out. And then I'm wrong. It turns into a high conflict because of something that either wasn't known or wasn't disclosed at the time of the initial consult. So my answer to your question is, I know it's high conflict, pretty much like someone might define pornography or beauty. It depends on who's asking the question, because what I think of as high conflict and what a client who's never been in conflict may think are two different things.
Well, but I want you to answer that question based on what you think of high conflict, because you and I both know that divorce is conflict, and conflict avoidant people will see even a little bit of conflict as high conflict. They'll see a little bit of assertiveness as aggressiveness. And so I think it's important that our listeners hear this conversation. One of the things I've noticed is if I have a client who is deeply traumatized, maybe because of the family of origin, and then living years in an imbalance of power in their marriage, they could have lost themselves. They could be highly reactive. They could be highly conflict avoidant. They could also be married to somebody who is stubborn, who is inflexible, who is always right, or who hides things like assets and is not transparent. Those are some of the things where I've seen from beginning to end, because of the personalities at play, that, and both sides of the table, maybe one more than the other, but both sides of the table, where it's kind of been a struggle throughout. So I'm hearing for you, it's also very circumstantial. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. If a client comes in and announces that their spouse is a narcissist or a high conflict personality, that's one place that we'll start talking. Because what I need to find out is, how have they resolved their conflicts in the past? And so that's the question I ask. So when there's a disagreement about something, how do the two of you dance that tune? And if it is, well, I always give up, or I always give in, or it's a knockdown drag out, or I hide what I'm buying, or whatever their answer is, then that's an indication as to how the case is going to play out. Because I don't transform them into a different way of resolving conflicts. It is part of their makeup. I try to deal with it. And particularly if I have a conflict avoidant client and I'm worried about him or her giving up some resources that we desperately need to restore to them, the one thing, if I could get them to just pause before responding, that would be a tool that I would try to incorporate into their always way of being. Because if they're the people pleaser, or he asked me a question and I said, sure, but then I looked at the calendar and I realized, so always bake into your safety net time. And you create, I don't know if you have talked to your audience about the Bill Eddy's work, but he's done a lot of work about high conflict. And it's a Bible for our clients, especially for parents, if they think they have high conflict. And sometimes they don't realize they have high conflict until they're in the middle of the divorce.
Right.
Right? Because they've gone along and gotten along and figured out how to coexist. And only when they've separated and they're in two different households and their parenting styles are different, or their spending styles are different, or whatever it is, that then elevates what was an okay dynamic to World War III, and nobody was expecting it. And I find his tools to be essential for clients who find themselves. I just think it's a good way to live. Because we've got enough conflict out there. We don't need to add to it in our world.
Yeah.
There's enough.
And Bill Eddy actually kicked off our series, so we're big fans of him over here. And yeah, he has a tremendous amount of value to offer. We talked a little bit about what high conflict might look like when you have power or extensive assets added to the mix of something that seems to be heading in a high conflict direction. What is your experience when those two are mixed together?
Oh, it can be quite dangerous, particularly if there has been a history of any kind of physical violence or significant wrongdoing, and by that, putting people at risk, either financially or physically. And that can happen in all kinds of ways. But we really need to drill down to determine what's the cause of it. And I'll give you an example.
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat, and results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
Oftentimes, couples will create job duties. My job is to manage the money. Your job is to manage the household. And we'll talk about it when there's a problem. Or I've had a couple of experiences where someone developed a spending issue to the point that it sent them to bankruptcy, not once, but twice. And so in a normal world, if someone came in and said, my wife has put me on an allowance, a term that's usually a bad word in my office, I'm thinking that's a control freak. That's somebody who's trying to manage and demean and belittle their spouse. But once I found out, oh, well, you've sent your family into bankruptcy twice because you can't seem to manage your money, it didn't have the evilness that I first put on there. So you have to look at the circumstances. And if their dance, and I keep using dance because I was in a trial last week and I kept saying the toxic dance that this couple has created, but the dance that the two of them have created over the course of their relationship, just because it seems unfair now at the time of divorce, doesn't mean it didn't have legitimate purposes. If someone was expecting that I'll take care of the finances, I'll take care of this, when we challenge that, it challenges their identity. And that can create a conflict that you didn't intend. You're just trying to get good information. If you're drilling down about somebody's spending and I want to see all your Amazon account, and I want to see your American Express, and I want to see your travel, I'm not doing that because I don't trust you. I'm just trying to do my due diligence. But if you're on the receiving end of that inquiry and you're used to doing and managing and you're blowing and going at high levels of spending, that could be offensive. So figuring out a way to message, and particularly if I am the recipient of those kinds of requests, trying to work with my client to please do not take this as some sort of dig or demeaning. We're just doing our jobs. And I think lawyers owe it to our clients. We owe it to the system. And Karen, we owe it to the public. Do not add fuel to this fire. Do not jump on the bandwagon of he did that, so it must mean this evil intent, that's the worst case scenario. Or she didn't let you have possession last weekend. She's trying to alienate you from the children. Do not engage with a professional that feeds into that, but instead goes, well, we need to investigate more.
It's just important. Well, you're saying something super important, because so often I'll have clients come and they feel like they're divorcing, for lack of a better term, a bully. So they're going to go out and hire a bully to fight their bully. And they're the one who ends up getting bullied on both ends. And to your point, right? Everything begins to escalate.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how do we avoid that? Because bullies tend to hire bullies. It's been my experience. So much depends on which court you land in. Different jurisdictions have different ways of doing it. I know in New York, they move from judge to judge. In Harris County, once you land in a court, you don't leave that court. Judges get elected, and so those may rotate, but you're always going to be in that court. In San Antonio, a couple of hours away, you could have one judge for your temporary order and a different judge for your final, so you don't have a lot of consistency. Every jurisdiction is going to have its own formula or recipe for how they move their cases along. But if you're in a place where you can have some predictability, and sometimes the unpredictability is the predictability, right?
Right.
So you just have to know and trust that if I try really hard to not put on my bully suit, because one, it doesn't look good, it doesn't feel good. But if that's the way that I have to move that one issue, then so be it. So you want a counselor who has the capacity to realize I can get a lot further in moving this case across the needle if we just do things professionally. But if somebody is on the other side truly being abusive, whether it's in your deposition or maybe even in court, sometimes having an attorney who has been calm, cool, professional throughout, who then flares because the bully has had enough. It's just enough. You've hit my limit. I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. So when that bully erupts, the Susan being a bully erupts, it is an unusual circumstance. And those around me know that that's unusual.
Right.
Because there are times where you just have to say enough's enough. But generally speaking, is it in a range that is tolerable? And putting your tolerance code on is probably a really good mechanism.
Yeah, so you've already dropped a couple of things. One is a few minutes ago, which is always take a beat, enjoy a pause, calm yourself down before you answer or respond. Don't take things so personally. It's not personal, it's just part of the process. And now this one. And so if you're always calm and then you have to stand up to the bully, it's a big statement that's being made, as opposed to if you're always inflaming everything. So I hear that.
Well, and Karen, have you had people go, my attorney doesn't get angry. He doesn't turn around and hit them with a giant petition or whatever it is that they're expecting. I think it's important to remind everyone that every reaction does not have to match the action. You know, I don't pretend to be an Eastern philosophy expert, but I do know about deflecting anger, because if I absorb it, nobody's helped.
We tell our clients, you do not have to accept every invitation to a fight that's presented to you. And that's what I hear you saying.
Oh, I had a long time ago, an old lawyer did a presentation. I got to tell you the story. So you had a flip phone, and the flip phone had duct tape on it, holding it together. It was just pitiful. And he pulls it out and he says something like, "Ladies and gentlemen, this phone does not have a constitutional right to be answered." And what that meant is not every request deserves an answer. Not every demand gets a response. Bill Eddy's got it in his book about there's some attacks on you that you cannot be silent on. But then there are others where your response could be, "I respectfully disagree with all of your assertions. Goodbye."
Exactly.
And some don't deserve any response.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love that.
Have you lost yourself in your marriage, fallen into self-doubt, insecure and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind free mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today.
So let's talk a little bit more about these high net cases when you're dealing with conflict and how they play out between the spouses. Like, there's certain elements that might come up. For instance, I know that I've had clients where they've been immediately shut out of all of the finances. So they can't gather documents for their net worth statement. They actually may not even have money to hire their attorney. Can you talk about maybe those two and then some others that play out and give our listeners some guidance?
When somebody has been strategizing about shutting out a spouse prior to the initiation of a case, it can have devastating long range and sometimes permanent consequences, because there aren't many lawyers who will take on a case that starts that way without some expectation of quick retainers, because that's an indication we've got a war coming up. Most of our judges will give you quick response time as far as a hearing, but there's no guarantee of a result. And depending on the facts of the case, it may warrant some emergency loans from family, friends, investment people, depending on your jurisdiction. But if they have been shut out, then trying to figure out what is the shortest cut way that I can figure out what to provide my lawyer. And it might be my tax accountant has a duty to me to give me the tax returns, just like to my spouse. That's a place that would be an easy ask. It might be my banker. I'm not going to be able to access the money, but I could at least access the accounts that had my name on them. With regards to credit cards, each credit card company is going to have a different rule. I don't pretend to understand those. It is unusual for there to be that kind of action that there weren't warning signs on. And when you have warning signs, it might be a good idea to create a fund that allows you some living space, because the law does not fix all the problems. We just can't. So if we can provide some cushion so that there is at least 2 months of living expenses for that person, it's helpful. But there are sometimes I just can't fix it if somebody really has closed somebody out until you get to court.
Let me just ask about that. So what if I'm getting ready to tell my spouse that I want a divorce? And I know that as soon as that happens, whatever access I have is most likely going to go away. And I know the rules and laws are different, so we're really talking spirit here, but would it behoove somebody to move some of their marital assets into an account so that they can retain an attorney, so that they can buy food, do whatever they have to do, not go out and buy a Maserati, but to take care of the business at hand so they're not between that rock and a hard place?
Within reason, probably the easiest solution is to go get a credit card in your name only, because that's not going to trigger an account being drained or money being moved. But a couple of credit card accounts that are established prior to the divorce, so that the joint credit helps create that cushion. Now, it doesn't get the credit cards paid, right? But it does give some cushion there. If, at least in the jurisdictions that I'm familiar with, and after being in the academy, I've got a pretty good handle on most. If I expect those accounts to get frozen as soon as my client says the D word, we will have a petition ready and the person needs to be served with the injunctions. Texas injunctions are almost automatic. It takes very little effort. And you're entitled to have them renewed. They're good for 14 days. And with little effort, you can have them continued for another 14 days. That gives you a month of pretty robust injunctions. You're not supposed to do things with credit cards. You're not supposed to close down bank accounts. There's just a lot in those that can protect I'll call it the have-not spouse, the one that does not have control over the assets. When you've got businesses that the court does not have jurisdiction over, somebody needs to think long and hard about before taking action.
So on that first piece, so if you have an injunction and then the have, they just ignore it and they just pull the money out anyway. Can you just explain to my listeners like what that protection actually provides them?
Sure. At least in Texas jurisdictions, if someone violates a temporary restraining order, which is what those injunctions are called at the initial, and the court finds out about it, the court will either have the money put back in or give to the innocent one the same amount of money. Because you're not supposed to do that. I can come up with a scenario where there's a legitimate reason. It wasn't to violate the court order. It was because there was an IRS debt and I needed to pay the IRS with that money. And that's what I did. Or there was some obligation that didn't fit within the authorized expenditures that still was a legitimate business. And so you're not going to get punished for doing things that are part of your ordinary customary. But the high conflict, some what we didn't talk about, is when substance abuse or addictive personalities are what trigger a lot of the high conflict, the gambling, the spending on other people, the risky investments. And there's not an easy Band-Aid to solve those problems. the only good thing is in high net worth, hopefully there's still enough money in the rest of the estate to provide some sort of equalization. But there's no, I sound like doom and gloom, but there's the reality of the law has a limited amount of ways to protect you. So if you're the have not and you're thinking about, well, when I file, she's going to really come down and start squeezing me out of everything. Before you announce, in fact, even before you hire the lawyer, do your own due diligence. Where are the tax returns? Can you get a copy? All of our phones can scan documents. If there's business records, get something, some list to help inform yourself and your counsel and your team. What are we looking for? Because when we send out these blanket discovery requests, okay, I've got one, I think we're up to 30,000 pages on our side. I mean, that's insane, just insane. So knowing ahead of time what you're going to be fighting over is important. Real estate records, those are all public, but you know, knowing what you need to know is, I just think it's essential. That there, long ago, I used to give a triple D speech to, and it was primarily women's groups, but now I think it would be equally applicable to men's groups and such. And it's the three D's. One of them is going to happen to you that's going to, death. One of you is going to die. And then what do you do? Where is all the stuff? One of you is going to get into debt. You need to know what's at risk. How do I protect what's at risk? And there's could be a divorce, because every single marriage will end. We cannot avoid it. We either die or we divorce. So know what it is. And so it's an opportunity to say to a spouse, listen, if you're at the hospital and you're in a coma, how do I get you out? How do I pay for your doctor? This isn't predicting a divorce. It's just being careful so that everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the most heartbreaking things is seeing individuals who feel such shame because they went through their whole marriage and they trusted. And now here they are on the precipice of a divorce or a high conflict divorce. And they really don't know. I had one client, her spouse would put his hand over the income on the tax return and have her sign it. She really had no clue about what was coming into the household. And it adds so much to that emotional turmoil throughout the process. Let's talk a little bit. So there's two other areas in the high net when there's a lot of real estate holdings and when there's a family business. And so could you just speak to those two different? I know we could do a whole session on every one of these. Right.
But let's talk about it just the lawyer's perspective. One, we do appraisals all the time. It's not owning the real estate. It's the type of holding. Is it highly liquid? Is it going to be something that we can flip fairly quickly? Is it income producing? Is there a carrying cost? Is there a mortgage? You know, all kinds of things, because I don't want a client to be real estate poor because, oh, the house is so important to me because the kids or whatever, you know, they're coming home from college and everybody wants to come to the family home. I think we've overestimated the value of a family home if it lands you in the poorhouse because you don't have the money to take care of the utilities. Yeah. So being very educated. And I get that you weren't at the time that you showed up in your lawyer's office. You should never leave a lawyer's office less informed.
Right.
You're right. You should never have less information that you have not gotten something back. And one of the things that we can help with is we're a team. We're a small boutique here in Houston, but I have a team of people I can bring in, people that are financial persons. And I don't mean that high end. How do we figure out what all those things are? Somebody who will help a client put together a budget because they've never put one together.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in that. If you've had such high wealth, you didn't need to worry about budgets. Great. But now you need to think about a budget because we have to go to court and ask for something. You need to know, what are you going to need at the end of this venture? That would be the marriage venture, so that you can survive and survive in a way that you can be okay. I got off track on the real estate. So real estate, knowing what it costs to own it, and knowing the timeline, if this apartment complex gets awarded to me, do I keep it as an income producer? Maybe. And I'm going to segue into businesses, especially those family businesses, because sometimes those family businesses own real estate. So listen to this magic. The family business owns some real estate. It's owned by a separate entity because they did all that for tax purposes or litigation or liability purposes. So what if we kept the family business in that person's name and kept the real estate in the other person's name. And instead of worrying about the valuation and the different, have the business rent from the prior owner. So that there's all kinds of ways to tease out, how are we going to divide up this family business? Family business, I've had one case in 42 years where post-divorce, they continued to own it together. They co-managed it together because by then several of their children were also in the business. And it just made sense to everybody. It was not formally a collaborative case, but you could have labeled it that way because they preferred to spend their money on their children and grandchildren, not mine. And hats off, that's the way we should approach our cases. So businesses that are family businesses where things aren't cooperative are troubling, to say the least. Those family businesses, particularly if the money came from inheritance and things, this is my daddy's and my granddaddy's business, there's a lot of entitlement. There's a lot of expectation. You can't possibly think you're going to take my daddy's business away. But if there's community funds or marital funds, we got to figure out how to value it. But for one case in all of my years, every business in a divorce went down in value. Every family law case I've had in all these years, there's one business that went up. Every other business went down. And some of it was make-believe. Right. Some of it was because the owner wasn't paying attention to the business and the value went down because divorce is distracting. Right. It takes a lot of energy to be engaged in a high conflict divorce. Right. It's exhausting. It is emotionally taxing. It costs an enormous amount of money. It's the resources that a high conflict case takes is really never ending. It's almost a PTSD creating event.
Right. Yeah. And it's very hard to be at the top of your game when you're worried about losing your kids and or being able to finance two households now and all of that. So with the family business, obviously there's going to be forensic evaluations to figure out what's going on with the business. And there could be real estate on both ends. And what I hear you saying is if you can get the parties to be creative, there's a lot of creative ways to navigate this. Because I think sometimes you have a client who's like, I want half of the business. And the business owner says, but I'm the business. So you take half and the business goes under. Now I can't pay you. I can't pay support for the kids or for you or whatever. And so there's a lot of complexities when you start getting into that mix.
Absolutely. And it is not just the business. Every jurisdiction is going to treat a closely held business differently. In Texas, if I'm the closely held business person, my personal goodwill, the business that comes to me because of my personality, is not part, let me repeat that, not part of the value. California, it's part of the value. New York, part of the value. Jurisdiction by jurisdiction makes a big difference of what kind of business that you have. If it's Acme Motor Parts and nobody's coming to Susan Myers because she owns Acme Motor Parts, the business goodwill is probably what we're going to do in their valuation. You want to make sure that your lawyer has a good team and resources for persons that can do solid valuations that will be approved by the court. There may be claims for wrongdoing. You want to make sure your experts that are retained by your lawyers have a really solid handle on the case law that supports all the different claims and it are ready to take the challenges that their expert is going to bring to the equation. If they own a lot of real estate, sounds kind of simple, but let's play Monopoly. You want this apartment complex? I want this apartment complex. I want this beach house. You want that Colorado house or whatever it is that they co-own. I did one where they treated the beach house almost like a timeshare. And sounds kind of silly, but we divided up the time like it was visitation of the house. They had to split the maintenance fee, there's a cleaning service, and then the maintenance fee equal, and then they each got use of half the house.
Wow. So you can be very creative. I want to hear, you just talked about a team. And so I know that there's the financial forensic evaluation, but what are some of the other team members when you're in this kind of a situation?
if there has been high conflict in their relationship, or high conflict is getting created, I think it is very important that our clients have a mental health professional that can come to their aid. And by that, it may be their own therapist that deals with the roller coaster that our clients are on. It might be a professional coach that helps train clients to use language that is more constructive when we're dealing with child custody. It might be a school expert that talks about special needs of their children. If we've got some severe conflict, that there may be some anger management, if there's been physical abuse, there's all kinds of professionals that your team should have access to. And it may be long-term therapy. It may be two sessions so that the language used in the case, whether it's their deposition or trial, is used conscientiously and not inflammatory. My daughter's a family lawyer in Denver, and they have a program, I think it's called Client Connect, and it has automatically a filter to keep a lot of that inflammatory language out. Because I know one of the programs, Our Family Wizard, a tongue beater.
Yep.
So I just think it's essential. And I do think that when you've got high conflict, if everyone, including the lawyers and everybody playing with the case, can use BIF responses, we will all get along a lot better. And for those in your audience that aren't familiar, BIF is brief, informative, friendly, and firm. Yeah. It is turned into a noun and a verb in my office.
Absolutely.
So send a BIF response, because you seldom will get in trouble if that's your response.
We're always asking, right? Did you BIF it? Are you BIFing it?
It sounds like my office. You did not BIF that. I told you to read that book. Well, I read it, but I didn't mean you to read it and not follow it.
Now on the team, so that's on the emotional side. When it comes to that high net, what are the other experts besides that financial forensic, that just a list, just so that people have it on their radar?
It could be your CPA. It could be a private investigator. In some situations, we really want to drill down on, what did he buy the girlfriend? Where do we find that? You might want to engage with a forensic electronic expert. So let's make sure that we don't have somebody being followed, that there's not a key striker where they can figure out if your electronic systems are compromised. In Texas, it came as kind of a shock to everybody. Once a divorce is pending, we're not allowed to follow the other spouse. I thought that was unusual. Apparently there was some very abusive stalking, and the legislature decided, well, we're just going to put this pendulum over here. And so there's no following. And you're like, well, there's legitimate reasons you'd want to know, but I wasn't in charge.
That's funny. I interviewed a quadro expert once who talked about the nightmare if those aren't filled out correctly.
The person that I use for a flat fee gathers the information needed for the quadro, make sure that it's in compliance with what the agreement was. Are we having survivor benefits or whatever the parameters are? Drafts it, make sure that it gets signed, make sure that it gets filed with the court and signed correctly. Once it's filed with the court, certified copy goes back, and they handle sending it to the plan administrator, and they follow up until it's approved.
It's like a whole big piece in and of itself.
That's for
pensions, right? Quadros are
correct. Pensions, 401ks, usually not stock options and restricted stock units. But if the company will accept a domestic relations order, which is not qualified in the sense that it's not tax benefited, but it's still a domestic relations issue, if that company accepts it, then they can prepare that as well. Because what you want is something that you can depend on. If something were to happen to one of the spouses, nobody has to follow up to get this handled. And the same is going to be true. I thought of another expert I brought in. The same is going to be true with real estate. If you've got some sophisticated real estate and we're trying to buy someone out of a piece of real estate, and we need to do that with equity financing, you need somebody that knows how to do that. So we've got a couple of people we can refer to. So you've got a closely held business, and both parties have ownership in it. One's the primary worker, but they're both on the formation documents. They're both in the bank accounts. They're quite commingled. And we're going to give the business to one of them and then do a buyback of either share buyback or promissory note with security, whatever it is, the animal that is that we solve it with. You need someone who can paper that, paper it well enough so that the owner is not hogtied to not be able to run the business, and the recipient of the deal gets what they bargained for.
Is that a business attorney? What's the title of that?
A transaction attorney, business transaction attorney. Think of it, mergers and acquisitions, it's like the reverse, right? So anybody that knows how to put businesses together knows how to untangle them. The other piece that isn't necessarily a business, but in these really high net worth, they have put a bunch of their stuff in trust. Sometimes they put everything they own in trust. Yep. If they put it in one of the trusts that are in the jurisdictions where we don't even get to ask questions, I don't know how to solve that problem. It's a topic in the family law circles because it creates an inequity that seems just grotesque. There's no way around it. It just seemed grotesque. But there's other normal kinds of families that put a lot of their stuff in trust because their estate planners thought it was a good idea, because it was for estate planning. It's disastrous in divorce planning. So you want to make sure, again, if they know how to put a business together, they know how to take it apart. If they know how to put a trust together, they know how to take it apart.
So you really, in this high conflict, high net worth situation, you could have a number of attorneys with different specialties that are all part of the team. Okay. And the last question on that is there any special complexity if somebody's dealing in hedge funds or whatever else would be in that category? This is not something I know a lot about, but could you just speak to that?
Yes. Anything where there is high risk, there's going to be valuation schisms that we aren't going to be able to figure out. We'll have ranges, but with real estate and some small businesses, you'll have a range of about 10%. In hedge funds, cryptocurrency businesses, electronic businesses, people that are running podcasts and TikToks and things where they generate money because of views, I don't know how you value them, because one bad review and it could all be gone. One bad recording, there's all kinds of, the higher the risk, perhaps the higher the value, the higher the risk, the lower the value. And often our high conflict personalities did not get there by being unsuccessful. Our high conflict people, I'll call them the narcissists. I hate putting labels on it, but those high demand, high driving, high type A's, they're often our COOs, our chief of surgeries, our whatever. And I think when I'm representing the other side, sometimes the best approach is to say, thank you. I really appreciate the hard work I know you put into to create this kingdom, because it was a lot. And the nice guy often is not the one that's the winner of the gold. That's the reality of our world. And to stand there and go, well, I'm entitled to this, without also being able to recognize, but for him or her being this way, we would not have all this to divide up. So have a moment of gratitude, because without it, we don't need to be here.
Yeah, no, and that's a perfect segue, because I would love to wrap up with your top do's and don'ts. And I know you could probably do that for a whole episode, but let's see if we can just wrap it up with a couple of do's and don'ts.
Sure. Okay. Do compartmentalize, because this could be an all engrossing, encompassing part of your world. And that doesn't help you, and it doesn't help your children. It doesn't help your family. Figure out a time budget per day or per week that you're going to devote to this divorce project. Make sure that you have created other avenues for your well-being, whether it's exercise, good eating, good sleeping, good exercising, do service for others. and have some spiritual component to your life will bring you that base of serenity to help you get through this, because it's going to be tough. Managing your attorney's time and attention. Clients that send 12 emails in a day do not get the kind of service that a client who says, I would like 30 minutes of your time, please let me do that. And they get all of their questions plus the follow-up dialogue, and they will get much more value. I get that I'm scared and I need an answer and I'm going to forget this. You can always send an email to yourself. You can create an email without addresses and start your list of questions and say, I would like to visit with Susan or her associate, or sometimes the paralegal is the one that has the most knowledge in your lawyer's office. Start at the low hourly person to get the bang for your buck, and be conscientious that you're hiring somebody who's probably popular. So when they're not available, don't take it as a personal affront. If you don't already have a therapist or a coach or somebody that you have to bounce your thoughts off, it's probably a good idea. Things not to do: stop catastrophizing. It's not healthy, it's not true, and it is a waste of everybody's energy. So stop presuming. I know he, she are doing this to hurt me. Oftentimes in your divorce, you're the last thing on that person's mind. They're doing it for their own selfish reason. You just happen to be a victim of collateral source. Never, ever, ever respond with emotion, ever. In fact, I'd make that 4 and 5. Do not respond with emotion. Do not respond with emotion. It doesn't matter what emotion. It's, I'm happy that you were in a car wreck. Don't do that. We don't need to hear, I love Taylor Swift's music, but we don't need her karma. Everybody knows. We don't need to say it.
Yeah. So these are great, great pieces of advice. And, you know, what you're really doing in the don'ts is don't throw gasoline on the fire. And there's so many ways you can do that. We often talk about divorce is painful, but the suffering often comes from that emotional reactivity and that assumption. Forget about why it happened. It happened. Stick with the facts. Stay away from the fiction. I love your list. Great list. Self-care, service, spirituality. Don't take it personally. Get emotional support through a divorce coach or a mental health expert. This has been fabulous, Susan. I am so grateful to have you with us. Are there any final comments that you want to share with our audience before you tell them how they can find you?
I think the last piece of advice is something I learned from a friend. And when you've got a bully on the side, think of this. When you aim for the king, aim well. So happy to visit with anybody. I'm probably not going to be helpful to anyone that's outside of Texas. Although if you need someone and would like some referrals, I've got some great friends all around the country. But we're here in Houston, Texas, happy to help.
Yeah. And so if we have Houston listeners, the best way, I have a whole bunch of links that will be in the show notes. The best way for them to reach you would be?
Our office is at 713-622-1600. That's 713-622-1600. And then our website, www.divorcehouston.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining
us. Pleasure. It's nice meeting you, Karen.
Thank you.
And to your listeners, don't give up, get over.
Yeah, good advice. We'll be back again real soon with another episode of the High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com. where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated.
regulating your emotional reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.